Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, I'm finally free. Finally, I'm finally me. Finally, I'm finally free.
My name is Jamie. I'm your host. Tonight's episode is Black Coders, Part 2, Part Dos. So we have a great panel on with me tonight. It's just me and the panel, and we're going to be talking about coding, what's going on in the STEM industries, and all of the information that you guys want to know about computer programming right here on this podcast. Before we get started and I introduce our panel, just want to make a couple of announcements. If you go to blackgirlnerds.com and enter to win free products, we have two giveaways actually that's happening on our website. So the first one is from I Love Mimi. There's a great hair elixir product that they have that they're giving away exclusively to all of the readers of Black Girl Nerds. So go to the website, check that out. And then tomorrow there will be a post from Southern Nerds. Southern Nerds is a really great new website and new concept from Greg Hanks where he's created this brand, and he's giving away coffee and a free T-shirt simply just by liking the page and following Southern Nerds on Twitter. So you'll see that tomorrow. So make sure you keep blackgirlnerds.com bookmarked on your web browser so you can keep checking in for those free giveaways, because we all love free stuff. I know I do. All right. Well, without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and pass over the virtual mic to our panel. We have on our podcast tonight, we have Daphne from Black Female Coders. Mika is part of Black Girls Code, great nonprofit organization. And we have Robert C. Young, who is a professional coder that's going to talk with us about all things related to programming and coding. So thank you guys so much for being a part of the show today.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yay! Let's begin by telling our listeners a little bit about yourselves. So we'll start with Daphne, Mika, and then Robert. Just tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do for a living.
Hi, so I'm Daphne. I run Black Female Coders. It's a blog that's currently hosted on Tumblr that is all about showing the world that Black female coders actually do exist, even though our numbers are tiny right now, that we're trying to expand them and really highlighting just the fact that we're in the field, that we're doing big things in the field and really showing people that we have a presence, and also providing a space to share experiences and share knowledge and advice and mentorship and guidance and figuring out how we can work together, not just to strengthen our bond within the field, but to help strengthen the field itself.
Excellent. And I am Mika Egwekwe. I am the technical lead for the Memphis chapter of Black Girls Code. Black Girls Code is a national program started in the Bay Area by Kimberly Bryant with the idea of encouraging more young girls ages 7 to 17 to consider careers in STEM, particularly in computer science. And so that program started in the Bay Area 2 years ago and is now expanded to some 10 cities. And as a matter of fact, we're currently in our Summer of Code campaign where we're expanding to 10 cities, as well as it's a fundraising campaign also to encourage more to give so that we can expand to even more cities. And at blackgirlscode.com, you can find out more about that. But I myself am a software developer for a company called Lokion Interactive, happens to be the charter sponsor for our chapter in Memphis. And I've been a software architect for Lokion for 6 years now, and a software architect, I guess, for 16 years total.
And I'm Robert Young. I'm a web developer at Full Throttle Design Studio here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Previous to that, I was a freelance web developer, but I'm also moving more into the mobile world these days, too. And previously, I was in the U.S. Air Force and did a lot of development while I was in the military.
Awesome, awesome stuff. So you guys, if you want to participate in this podcast, if you've got questions and you want to talk to us live, be sure to call in. Our number is 347-237-4616. And you can always jump in via Twitter and talk to us using the hashtag BGNPodcast. All right, so my first question is for each of you. What does coding mean to you? And we'll just start in that same order that we did our introduction, starting with Daphne, Mika, and then Robert.
It's a really interesting question. It's a big question. For me, coding can mean different things in different contexts. In a very literal sense, to me, I see it as an art form. I see it as a way of creatively expressing instructions for a computer to follow, as a way of developing programs, but also greater technologies that could be used by anyone in the world to accomplish particular tasks and help move society forward. But I also see it for me personally as just it's my passion. It's something that I love doing, and it's a release for me in a big way. So that's kind of it takes different roles in my life.
And I to answer that question of what does coding mean to you, I tend to think of coding within the context of the greater software development lifecycle. That starts with developing requirements and then doing design and then the coding and then the testing of what you coded. And so I see coding as one actually small but highly important element in the software development lifecycle. And in the African-American community, where we have a serious shortage of those who know how to code, we have a long way to go, but I think we're moving very positively and aggressively in that direction to bring up the community to where we have coders that contribute and then that later can contribute to that greater software development lifecycle that I was just describing from requirements to testing. But coding is definitely obviously very important. You don't have a software product without it. it's the actual work of organizing the instructions to have a product that functions, an app or website or what have you.
And for me, coding is, just like Daphne said, it's been my passion since basically I was 7 years old and my dad gave me my first computer and I was writing basic programs in a notebook with pencils. It basically taught me how to take complex ideas and break them down into simpler parts, and it gave me an avenue to experiment with new ideas. It taught me how to stay persistent and persevere in the face of, you know, being frustrated with bugs or any kind of problems you run into until, you know, you figure it out and you got them working well. And another one of the side effects, you know, at least once I started interacting with other coders, is that it taught me how to collaborate with others. Mm-hmm. So it's been a huge part of my life.
Daphne, what kind of qualifications do you need to become a computer programmer?
I think the most fundamental qualification is a willingness to learn. I've noticed, so in terms of my own history, I came into coding a little bit later than the route that most take. I started a little bit later in college. And so with that, I ended up having to squeeze a normal 4-year track into a much smaller 2-year track. But the only way I would have gotten it done is through a willingness to learn and a willingness to let myself get frustrated and work through that frustration. As Robert was speaking to a little just a minute ago, just being able to work through a problem until you solve it. I think coding teaches you a lot of patience. And so being able to push past that frustration and really try to tackle that problem. I see it as it's less about having an aptitude towards it per se, but more so just really wanting to learn, being motivated and being persistent and really having the passion and motivation to keep pushing towards learning it, I think is the fundamental aspects of it.
Awesome. Well, we've already got some questions on Twitter. Cynthia Linnell, she wants to know for the panelists, what are some projects that you've worked on to build?
Well, I can chime in that regard. Projects that I've worked on to build have ranged from accounting applications for a rice company, which I learned a lot about how rice gets from the field to your plate. That's for one example, and then other projects have been security applications that have been mobile-based applications that have, so there's so much room in software development to be exposed to so many different things and so many different platforms, especially in this day, that it's actually a lot of fun because, you know, I went to college and got a degree in computer science and went and got a master's in computer science, but I just learned how to build applications, and the great thing about this field is that you're building applications that solve real problems, and so you get to actually touch on different spaces of other problem domains that have nothing to do with computer science, but actually are helped by the fact that software makes those problems simpler and more manageable. So I've I've worked on a number of different things, and like I said, it's great having the opportunity to have such a wide array of our problem domains to address.
Yeah, I mean, I can, you know, I'll chime in too and say that the kinds of applications that I've worked on have run the gamut. I mean, in my current job right now, I work on the security team for a printer company, and so basically what my team handles is any and all security-related protocols that get run and enforced on the box, and also being able to understand, you know, thinking like a hacker in the sense that understanding, you know, what kinds of systems do we need to put in place to prevent hackers from being able to use the device for malicious purposes. And so, you know, I've built applications and helped implement protocols that do exactly that. But then in my own spare time, I do a lot of, learning web development and learning, you know, different back end, understanding how to build a database and all of these different things. So I've worked on Android applications. It runs the gamut. I worked on an Android application for an organization called Hollaback, which is an organization that's anti-street harassment. And so they do really incredible work, and it was wonderful having the opportunity to work with them a few years ago to help completely redesign and rebuild their Android app. And so I've had opportunities to do that. That's what I love about the field, too, is that, you know, people, when they think of computer programmers, usually it's very, like, you know, the typical stereotype of someone mm-hmm. kind of, you know, being locked in their mom's basement and working on these tools that run behind the scenes that no one ever really, you know, like, it seems very not relatable. But what I love about what I do and what I see a lot of other people doing is building applications that are used by everyday people all the time and get a lot of visibility and being able to tackle real-world problems that actually, like, help people. So, for example, with this Hollaback app, it was really cool to work on that because it wasn't just about building an app, but it was about building something that brings together communities and is helping activists do their job. And so, you know, it's cool to have the opportunity to work on projects like that.
I guess I can jump in real quick. I mean, I've built or been part of a team that's, you know, built things as difficult, or, you know, as when I was in the military doing the user interface for satellite tracking software for Space Command, to, you know, a lot more simpler things since I've been a freelance developer doing a front end or, you know, user interface and database interaction for a local record store, their shopping system. So, and now I'm kind of stepping into the Android application area too, and I've done a couple, like, experimental musical apps for a friend that we've collaborated on, but I'm starting to go in that direction a little bit more. That direction gets me pretty excited, so I'm starting to move that way, but for the most part, web developing and, you know, working with JavaScript is what I use to pay the bills.
Now, what's the difference between web development and coding, or are they the same? Because I always hear those words used interchangeably, but I didn't know if there was a distinct difference.
You want me to take a stab at that first?
Sure.
Web development is coding. I mean, it depends on what part of web development you're talking about. When you're talking HTML, CSS, they're not considered, you know, coding languages or anything like that. They're more for content and the design of the content. But JavaScript is a coding language. When people talk web development, they're normally talking development for the browser specifically, as opposed to, you know, once you start going into Java and stuff like that, you're getting more enterprise applications. You know, your banking applications and stuff like that. And even those languages have web frameworks, so they can be used for web development also.
Yeah, to jump in and add on to that, I think that I would almost say that web development or web programming is a subset of coding. So coding can run the gamut from, as Robert was describing, you know, the JavaScript, more designing or developing for the browser specifically, to enterprise applications, to also more what they call embedded development, which is more along the lines of what I do. And so what embedded development means is writing software or coding specifically for devices, right? So, for example, when you build an Android app for your mobile phone, that's more along the lines of embedded development because you're building something that will run on an actual device. Or like with the work that I do, I write code that runs on a printer, so that would be considered embedded development. And so there's just different aspects of coding in that way. And I would say that web development is one aspect, but coding is a lot broader than just that.
Nice. Okay. Cool. We've got a lot of questions on Twitter, so I'm going to jump to the questions on Twitter and divert myself from my own questions. Tanella0426 asks, is game programming and application programming two different worlds, and which one is the best to jump into?
I say you can't go wrong with either one. I mean, there's plenty of business opportunities and you know, entrepreneurial opportunities in both of those spaces. They are different. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if you are really into gaming, you're going to take to game development a lot. Plus, you know, you do a lot of interesting things with games because you make a lot of visually appealing things. It's a lot of fun to do that sort of thing. I have to admit, I'm not gifted in that regard. And so I opted for more on the basic generic application perspective of that's largely web-based applications as well as mobile applications and, you know, general business applications. That's for me, because it's for me it's more straightforward to do a lot of system integrations and tie it all to a user interface. And that's not a lot of real-time aspects necessarily to that, like a game where you have to synchronize audio and video, depending on the game, and things of that nature. But both of those spaces, in my opinion, you totally can't go wrong. I mean, there's so much opportunity and such a shortage of people that have the skills to do those things. You pursue what you love in that regard and have a field day.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say, do the one you love the most. And I would say that for anything that you get into when it comes to coding. Don't try to go and, you know, look for the money. You don't really have to worry about that too much. The money's, you know, in that area to begin with. You know, they're always looking for coders. So just go for what you love the most.
Good stuff. We've got another question from Unicorns and Glitter, Cynthia Linnell. She asks, what's the difference between front end versus back end?
I can answer this one. So essentially, front-end development, and both, I see both as more specific to web development, but front-end development is what Robert was describing with being able to understand how to display content, display and interact with content on a web page. So that's your HTML, your CSS, and a lot of your JavaScript, too, is being able to design the actual layout of the web page, being able to understand how users will interact with it and understanding the usability of your web content. And then the back end would be more along the lines of the content itself, being able to manage it. So with like a database, for example, understanding how to get the front aspects of it, the front end aspects to talk with the back end. A lot of that is handled in the back end. And it's interesting because with a language like JavaScript, more and more you have opportunities for it to kind of be in both of those realms. So you can use JavaScript to interact in the front end. And so, for example, a user clicks a button and a screen pops up, but the web page doesn't refresh. That's all JavaScript happening. But at the same time, you can also have JavaScript running in the background where it's communicating with the server, which is the back end, to actually grab the actual string, the text that would need to be displayed in the box that pops up. So that's more or less the difference. One is about understanding and working with the content for it to be aesthetically pleasing and usable and interactive and whatnot. And then the other part is managing the content itself.
Yeah, I totally agree with all of those things. And you know, what was just described was from a web perspective, but also even from your mobile device, which nowadays everyone has a smartphone, and your apps that run, some of them are entirely contained to run on your device, on your phone or your iPod, but some of them actually communicate with the server on the back end. So if you're using a Maps application, for example, like Google Maps, you're going to use the front end that's running on your phone, but the maps, the actual maps are not sitting on your phone. It actually goes back to a server to retrieve that, and that server's on the back end and serves that map to your phone, and that's why it takes a few seconds for that to render on your phone. So that's another example of a front-end, back-end. And the way that those things talk to each other is by an agreed-upon interface. You know, the front-end and the back-end agree, the writers of those two things are going to agree that this is the protocol that we're going to use to talk to each other. And typically that's called an interface.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Tanella0426 asks, what is the best way to start development of a phone app?
That's a great question.
Yeah. My first immediate reaction is to read the API, but I don't know if that's the best way to start.
That's easy.
That's a great question. I can tell you that there are so many more tools now than there used to be when smartphones really, you know, when the iPhone, for example, first came out. It wasn't a whole lot to help you in that regard, but, you know, but buy a book and hopefully you know how to program in Objective-C or whatever, right? But nowadays, there are plenty of tools. So there's a thing out there called PhoneGap that allows you to develop that for basically multiple platforms, including iPhone and Android. One of the things we're using at Black Girls Code for our girls, my daughters included, do this at home. They develop Android-based apps using App Inventor, which is was created by Google, but now is run by MIT. That allows you to basically connect blocks together that have each having different types of functions, and then you can actually run that on your Android phone or or in my daughter's case, they run it on their Amazon Kindles. And they don't know a lot about coding, but they know that they want an app that makes a cowbell ring and they shake it.
That's
and
adorable.
They shake their Kindles. Yeah. And it works, though. I mean, and in fact, they taught me quite a bit in that regard. So there's so many tools out there to make it easier. I would say, look at things like App Inventor for Android, or look at things like PhoneGap that work across multiple platforms.
Great question.
Yeah, I would say that to kind of piggyback on that, I would say that you know, things like PhoneGap are great because you can experiment, you know, just using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and then kind of deploy it to all the different platforms and not be locked into the, you know, the native platform, whether it be iOS or Android. But if you are hardcore like that or you're in one of those systems already, you already have an iPhone or you already have an Android phone and you want to get into it, then you might want to start digging into the SDKs for those specific native platforms. And it gives you a little bit more power. You have access to some parts of the phone on the native with the native SDK that you don't with PhoneGap, but PhoneGap's a great place to start if you want to be able to hit everything and experiment.
For sure. And just to like reiterate for those who don't know, SDK is the software development kit. So what that means is it's essentially it's what is provided to developers to help them get started and continue developing on a particular platform. So oftentimes you'll hear of different platforms having SDKs so that developers can go right in, jump right in, and understand what kinds of functions they can call or how they use the platform to to build off of it to get to achieve or build whatever it is they want to build. And so what's wonderful about SDKs too, if you find good ones and they're well documented, they often also provide startup tutorials. So if you go, for example, if you want to start building an Android, you go to the Android SDK webpage, and they have a whole section on getting started where they take you step by step through what programs and text editors you need to install, like Eclipse, for example, on your computer, and like how you download different plugins and install those to help you get started in building an Android. And then they also have like a sample, like example app that's really, really basic that they take you step by step through on how to build yourself, so that you have a better understanding of, like, where to go and what everything looks like and how to get started. And you can use that as a springboard for building your own app individually.
Awesome. Good stuff. Okay, so we've got Charles Nuatu, spelled N-W-A-T-U. He asks on Twitter, can anyone expand on web application security testing and secure code development?
So I can speak on secure code only because that's a lot of what I do, a little less in terms of web applications specifically, so maybe some of my other cohorts on this panel can speak to that. But in terms of secure coding, a lot of that is really being able to understand and think through creative ways that hackers may be able to use different aspects of your application to and like pinpoint different weaknesses to try to break in and get information that's important to them. So, for example, something as small as returning an error page from your server in the web browser could prove to be incredibly useful for a hacker, because at that point, even just seeing an error page, they can get information that can help them realize, oh, well, if I do this, this error page comes up. So how can I use that to my advantage to what the, you know, to what they call a denial of service to system? Maybe if I like send enough of these, send enough to the server to cause it to completely shut down, now nobody else has access to that server, and thus I can do what, you know, XYZ else. So being able to kind of understand little things like that, or for example, putting in username and password. There's a lot that can happen with that as well. If you put in your username but the incorrect password, and a message gets returned to you that's like, well, your username is right, but your password's wrong. Well, now an attacker knows, okay, great. This significantly limits the number of combinations I now need to try, and thus it makes it a lot easier for me to figure out how to hack into that system. So kind of getting a sense of how are different, what are the kind of more creative ways that someone could find weaknesses in my system?
Yeah, I don't know if I have much to add to that. I mean, there's so many examples of tricks that people use. Here's one that we have to code for all the time or watch for all the time, where we'll have a form on a web application, and people who are savvy enough to figure out, well, hey, they might be using MySQL as the back-end database, or they might be using Oracle as the back-end database. They might actually, instead of filling out the form, the fields in the form correctly with, you know, mm-hmm. like name and birth date or whatever, they may actually put a little database code in there and see if they can get the system to actually break and maybe or behave differently, right? Or they might actually try to put some JavaScript code in there. Right, and so if you're not watching for those kinds of sneak attacks, then you can be burned by it. But fortunately, there are a lot of very common attacks like that you can go to various sources. I'm drawing a blank on their names right now, but there's plenty online to look for those kinds of attacks. And denial of services, like Daphne said, is one of the most common ones where your service to your website is actually denied because some hacker has decided to make your server so busy that it can't serve legitimate requests. And so all those kinds of things are very common, fortunately, that you can watch out for those things. But you have to just, you have to think like a hacker in a sense and say, how can I break this? And I had a job once where that was a lot of fun, where it's my job to actually see how I could break it. that's totally fun, and because in a sense I got paid to play and just get as radical as I could. And that's this, but you have to start thinking that way also, and just find out what the classic attacks are, and make sure you build your application to protect against that, and obviously use some of the common things like firewalls also to protect your servers.
Yeah, as a web developer, that's like the number one thing that I'm asked to do when I'm coding, is to make sure, if you don't do anything else, is to make sure that I sanitize any user input before it's processed. So that's any kind of form on a page, anything that a user can enter into the browser. I have to make sure that it's sanitized, removing any kind of, special characters and stuff like that, and filtered before it's sent to the back end. And that prevents a lot of what we call cross-site scripting attacks, or injection attacks, where people are injecting things into these forms. So it's all about sanitizing any kind of user input before it's processed by the server.
One thing I would also add too, if anyone out there, and for the person who asked this question, if you're looking for more resources and to learn more about this, I recommend reading a document called Safe Code for Agile Practitioners. It's something I actually read while I was at work, and it helped us out a lot. If you go to safecode.org, they talk all about that. Their whole purpose is to not only discuss secure coding, but also to help more developers actually implement and be more aware of secure coding practices, not just in terms of web, but across coding in general. And also look into the work of a man named Dr. Hugh Thompson. He works with the RSA. It's a very key security group organization. And he's done a lot of work on security, but also secure coding and understanding, thinking like a hacker, and written tons of papers on that. So if you're looking on ways to get more information and more resources, I would definitely check those out.
Cool. Good resources. Twyla Dang asks, what programs or services would you recommend for a newbie jumping into app development?
I presume when she says app development, she means like mobile app development, or is she speaking more broadly? I'm not sure, but if she's thinking of mobile app development, some of the things that were mentioned earlier, there are a lot of different options. Daphne, for example, as well as Robert mentioned, the SDKs for iPhone or Android. Plus, we talked about PhoneGap and App Inventor. So those kinds of things for newbies are places where you can start. Obviously, you're going to need a little more as well. If you're looking at web development, like web apps, then the languages that you're going to have to eventually get comfortable with are HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So I would begin to understand what those things are and how they're used and what their roles are, build from there. Also, there are a number of resources online that can help in that regard. Khan Academy, for example, has videos on some of these topics, as well as YouTube is just covered with all sorts of short videos that are introductions to these technologies. But so it depends on the kinds of apps you're talking about. But most people are interested in web apps or mobile apps today, and so those are the things that I would suggest. I'm sure my cohorts on the line also have ideas as well.
One thing I would suggest too is I think those are all really great suggestions, and I would definitely emphasize taking advantage of those, and especially the different websites that were mentioned, like Khan Academy, Code Academy even, or Coursera, or just different resources online that can help you. But also, if you're looking for something that's a little bit more formal and in person, I would also recommend checking out like coding classes. So for example, Girl Develop It has chapters all across the country where they actually teach introductory programming classes. And if I recall, a lot of them tend to be more on the web development side, but if I'm sure that you could probably find a class that is mobile or a web app in general or something like that. But also looking into classes like that where in your area, maybe even seeing if there are any meetups in town, you find the most random meetups for things. I actually found myself at a Linux user group meetup last week. So in Lexington, Kentucky, of all places. So they exist. You just got to look for them. But being able to kind of find that community and that niche. I know for me personally, like on the other side of that, I actually host web app coding classes in Lexington. I have one coming up, actually. But they definitely, people are out there trying to do things. So if you could just find resources online that could give you a sense of who in your town is trying to do this, and then you can link up with them.
And for the record, Twyla meant mobile apps. And we did speak to that. So thank you for those questions. Melanie Gordon asks, as more people learn to code, do you think that these skills will be in demand for years to come?
I definitely do. I mean, I don't see any end to the technology that's coming out. It seems like every couple of months, something's new coming out, whether it's a game system or a new mobile phone or, Google or Apple is, adding more features to their SDK when their new hardware devices come out. There's always new technology popping up with, and a lot of them provide software development kits when they come out. So I really don't see any end to it in the near future at all.
Yeah, I agree with Robert. In fact, statistically, the sheer number of jobs that demand these skills is growing at a far greater pace than we're producing people that have these skills. So for those who have these skills, it's just a real opportunity to have access to very low unemployment. there's just so much opportunity for those who grab that bull by the horns and commit themselves to getting in the space. And the need for software, especially, is just growing by leaps and bounds because, 10, 20 years ago, we just never really imagined so many devices have running software. Now you got refrigerators that run software and all sorts of things, thinking about embedded software and devices and so forth. So there's so much need that's growing, and all of the spaces in software are growing that you can't really go wrong going with coding as a career, in my opinion. And you can't go wrong in terms of what niche you're going to follow in that regard, because all of it is growing. And I agree with Robert that I don't see it ending anytime soon until they can figure out how to get the computers to write all the code that they need themselves.
Then
we'll all be out of jobs.
Well, I completely agree. And I think what's awesome, too, about the field and the fact that it is expanding at such a rate is that there's so many opportunities for you to take coding in so many different directions. I mean, you could go from having your regular 9-to-5 desk job where you're sitting and just writing code all day to, founding a startup where you have this awesome idea and you want to push it forward to, working with a group of people in a nonprofit organization to, embed wireless in a particular device working in some remote part of the world that doesn't have internet access. Or there's just so many different directions in which you can take it. And so your options are limitless if you get into the field. And I think that's really the message that a lot, at least I know, like my group is trying to push. And I see that as well in Black Girls Code and various other organizations that are really trying to emphasize that there's a spot for you here. everybody just has to find their niche.
And when you do, you know, if you do decide to come into this field, you don't have to feel like you're stuck in whatever, you know, language or, you know, area mm-hmm. you decide to specialize in. Because once you know a language, you know, once you've been working with a computer language for a while, you know, picking up new languages becomes, you know, I wouldn't say it's trivial, but many of them are very similar to each other. So you're not starting from square one again, and you can go in another direction.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I see it as programming languages are computer scientists' tools. So just like, you know, a painter has their brushes and their canvases that they use, we have our programming languages, and those are our tools to get to build whatever it is that we want to build. And once you've learned how to master one tool, it becomes easier to change them, to interchange them.
Exactly.
Well, we have a caller on the line, so let me go ahead and bring them on. Area code 661, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds. What's your name and where are you from?
Hey, this is Joe Nickbone calling from Louisiana. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I just posted in your chat room, and I'll say it here. Google Plus is like the best resource I have ever seen for coding, all right? And not only is it a good resource, but you have direct access to Google coders themselves. There are a number of communities on Google Plus where you can ask questions and get answers right away directly from Google. So if you're serious about it, I highly suggest moving to Google Plus. You know, it hands down. I've been coding since COBOL days in punch cards. Let me tell you,
nice.
You know, this is the most beautiful time to get into the business, number one, because you have so many avenues for growth, and you are directly in touch with the developers that are creating the languages that you're using and the tools that you're using. So I highly suggest anybody get in now while the floodgates are open. That could change down the road. You don't know. This is a beautiful time to do it.
I agree with you about Google Plus 100%. I'm probably a member of 24 communities on Google Plus for different languages or different libraries, and it's mm-hmm. such a great resource.
Yeah, I agree too with Google Plus because it's so mm-hmm. it's more popular with techies than mm-hmm. Than anybody, right? So
yes.
Most of the people I know that are heavy Google Plus users are software developers or IT security people, or, you know, they're in the tech space largely. I know a few that aren't, you know, but it's not like Facebook where, you know, where my mother is.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is a great way, Google Plus, to connect with people that that you know are doing things in the tech space, and Google, like to that point that was made earlier by the caller. They do have a lot of their own developers who are, you know, eating their own dog food, if you will,
uh-huh.
by heavily using Google Plus. So I think I agree that that's a great resource, one of several resources available, but certainly Google Plus, I think, is a good way to connect with tech people and not be drowned in a lot of political messages and all
right.
the other things that you might see in the other social media platforms.
Yeah.
Can I add one small point? One of the ancillary effects of the changes in the healthcare law is the opening up of big data and actually devices in healthcare. And right now, they cannot get enough programmers, you know, to manage the changes that are coming forth. It's a huge opportunity, not just
right.
for programmers, but for DBAs, you know, for anybody that's involved in data in any way, shape, or form. You know, I've long ago put programming aside, and now I'm a BSA/project manager, the business systems analyst. And even that field is so wide open that they're importing people from other countries, India. And you know, it's about wanting it and stepping forward while it's still an open gate for folks before they've started formalizing it and adding all these certifications. Someone with enough determination can get in and do very well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. The healthcare space is wide open and prime for entrepreneurship right now. So
yes.
I can't agree more.
Right. Thanks for letting me speak. I'll sit back and
Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Yeah, I remember us talking about that on the first podcast about the healthcare industry and how that's very important, and it's a growing industry substantially. So one other question I had, this is kind of more of a personal question for me. If you're a blogger or if you maintain a website of some sort, is it important to have coding skills?
I don't think it's a requirement, but I would say that it's something that's very, very, very good to have in your tool belt, if only because you're killing two birds with one stone, right? Instead of, you know, trying to find somebody else who can either build or maintain your site for you, you now can do it on your own, and it saves costs, but it also gives you a new whole set of skills to learn.
Yeah, I agree, and it allows you, especially when you want to do something different that, you know, let's say I've got a number of friends who blog using WordPress or host websites using WordPress. They don't know anything about coding. But then when they want something special, like their theme to have an unusual color or whatever, they ask me for help. But if you have coding, you know, if
I've had to ask Robert for some help sometimes.
Well, there you go. fine example right there. And so if you've got some coding experience at all, or at least, you know, comfortable with it, it's actually a fine way to get introduced to coding in a sense, you know, if you're running a blog and just kind of, you know, experiment a little bit with, you know, what happens if I change this here and change this there, or if I've got this unique thing I wanted to do, why don't I try to do it myself with a little bit of code? Usually it's only, you know, one line or 10 lines of code. It's not like you're writing something entirely from scratch. So having coding skills as a blogger definitely helps in terms of making your product exactly how you want it to be.
Yeah, it kind of allows you to dip your foot in, just, you know, dip your foot in a little bit, get a little bit of experience with it. And it also allows you to fix any kind of minor problems that come up, you know. A lot of times, you know, everything goes smoothly, you know, most of the time on blogs. But if any kind of, you know, minor issue comes up, you might be able to fix that yourself without, you know, having to go, you know, get help from somebody else. So it can't hurt at all.
Good stuff. Don Gibson asks, what's the top reason non-coders should get into the scene? I think we touched on that a little bit. Yeah, job security, extra money.
Well, I mean, jobs, period. I mean, there's so many places out here looking for people that can code and they can't fill spots, at least here in Minneapolis, and I'm pretty sure it's like that almost, you know, most places you go. They can't fill the spots. So.
I agree, and not only the job security and as well, because there's such a demand for coders that that, you know, there's certainly dollars in that regard, given the basis of supply and demand, but also it's very empowering, right? Because you know, if you want to be an entrepreneur and you have these skills, you can make things happen, right? I mean, that's what Mark Zuckerberg did. That's what so many others have done. And you're not limited. And what's so great about it is that it's objective, right? It's a machine that you're programming, right? So it doesn't matter whether you're male or female. Doesn't matter whether you're black, white, Asian, Latino. You learn these skills, you can make things happen, right? So, so if you're a non-coder, you want to become a coder, do that, because the door is wide open to you to become a billionaire, literally.
And he's not exaggerating.
And you can really change the world.
Right.
I'm not exaggerating. That's right.
and I would. You know, as has already been mentioned, I mean, it's a pioneering field right now. It's a pioneering time, and so being able to jump into it while the quote unquote floodgates are still open, right, is it's the best time, as opposed to waiting until the bubble is popped and it's you know, oversaturated, or the opportunities are still there, but they're much harder to get and there's more levels. I think the beauty of the field right now and where it is right now is that it's so tangible. Everything is so tangible, not just even in terms of the actual aspect of coding itself and, you know, as was described, like the fact that the machine is objective, but even just in terms of the field. I mean, you know, with the conversation on Google Plus, it's true. It's developers these days, the people who actually build the systems that we use every single day are so much more accessible. Everybody is so much more easily accessible. And so being able to get into the field at this point in time while they're still accessible makes your life a lot easier than, say, waiting until, you know, that's no longer there. Those resources are a little bit harder to get to.
And I would also add that the field is so diverse that mm-hmm. it's not like, you know, you have to worry about going into, you know, like finance and you're stuck in finance. It branches out into everything. It branches out and touches everything. You can go work with nonprofits. You can, you know, work with cars, you know, do software for cars. I mean, you can go wherever you want. So you'll never, at least in my mind, you'll never be bored because there's always another field you can use your coding skills in that you may be interested in.
Absolutely. And, like, that's the beauty of it, too, is because at the end of the day, what coding teaches you is a whole paradigm. It's a whole way of thinking. And so now, I mean, I realize that I approach my life this way. A good friend of mine actually told me, like, the official term for it, but it's called computational thinking. I didn't even realize I was doing this, but now it's one of those things where, like, I see my life in this way, like, the way that I interact with things. I see coding as a metaphor for all of the different things, the way that I approach life and the way that I approach problem solving. And so it's one of those things, as Robert was saying, that's what makes it so transferable to other fields, is that you're never fully locked in because at the end of the day, what you've learned is a whole way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I'll just build on what you just said too, because you had made the point, Daphne, earlier about coding being artful, and it is. You know, a lot of people think that coding is something that's like very rigid. And mm-hmm. obviously, the machine is going to respond rigidly based on what you tell it to do, right?
Mm.
But you can ask two or, you know, three or 100 different developers to solve the same problem. They're going to all do it a different way, just like you're writing an essay. They're going to all write an essay a different way. So there's so much room to be artful. And I've seen some people just so elegantly solve problems. It's like, wow, that's amazing. You know, it's like Picasso or you know, Chinua Achebe or whomever, right? So I just wanted to add that other point that there's so much room as the points were made earlier to be expressive and creative and artful at the same time, you know, become wealthy and change the world in that way. So.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you guys for coming on the podcast. We're about to close the show. Before we go, can you just each give us your social networking shout outs, your website, so listeners can know where they can contact you and find more information about what you guys are doing? We'll start with Daphne.
I'll go first then.
We'll
start with Daphne.
Yeah, Daphne
right
Baker than Robert.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't know if there was like an order, so I was just kind of listening quietly. So I can be found primarily on Tumblr. It's blackfemalecoders.tumblr.com. I'm also on Twitter as blackfemcoders. I'm just both of those places are probably the two best places to find me. You can also send me an email at blackfemalecoders@gmail.com. But anytime, if you have any other questions or just want to know how to get into the field or looking for resources or anything like that, or just want to chat sometimes, I'm totally open to that. So just hit me up whenever.
Right, and I'm Meka Egwekwe, and I'm the tech lead for the Memphis chapter of Black Girls Code. Black Girls Code is a national program, and you can certainly learn more about Black Girls Code at blackgirlscode.com, as well as follow Black Girls Code on Twitter at Black Girls Code. obviously one word. And I'd like to also emphasize again, we're in the midst of our Summer of Code campaign, and so we're reaching 10 cities this summer. Your city may be one of those cities. Go visit blackgirlscode.com. And if you're so inclined, I encourage you to make a donation today. We've got our campaign that's wrapping up on this coming Thursday, the 26th of July. So Black Girls Code, follow us on Twitter and visit blackgirlscode.com.
And for me, on Twitter, I'm at Robert C. Young. And on Google Plus, I guess you would just have to look up Robert Young, maybe Robert Young Minneapolis. I don't know. But I'm a pretty avid Google Plus user. So if you need help finding some of the coding communities on Google Plus or anything like that, you can check me out there.
Good stuff, everybody. Thank you guys for coming on the podcast. Thank you all for listening. Next week, we have motivational life coach Jasmine Doster. She will talk about her personal experiences and life lessons in the areas of spiritual well-being and empowerment. She also has a new book coming out called You Think You Know. Thank you, Daphne. Thank you, Mika. Thank you, Robert. Again, great podcast, a lot of insight. Anytime. This is a topic that we could talk about forever. So thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jamie.
This was so fun. And thanks to everybody on the panel. This was awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
Looking forward to part 3.
Yeah.